Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. Not just any day though, it's Friday, which means that if you're lucky enough to be one of the dwindling few Americans that gets a weekend, you've got some good news coming up within 24 hours and I'm gonna be enjoying it. I'm also planning on enjoying this show, not only because we've got awesome stories to talk about, but because I will once again be joined on the Friday edition of the Damage Report by contributor to Rebel HQ, as well as literally everything else that exists, Jessica Burbank. Welcome back to the show.
Amazing intro. Yes, happy to be here Garbage Day.
Exactly, we've got garbage and thankfully we also have a can that it conveniently slots into. Everyone was pretty much the worst this last week, so I'm looking forward to finding out who you want to throw in there.
There's a lot to pick from.
There is. And by the way, so for the community garbage person, which I look forward to every week, we choose a few people based on, you know, crowdsourcing. We lock it in by Wednesday. And the downside of that is always sometimes you get some real garbage after Wednesday. We're not explicitly gonna be talking about it, but Tucker Carlson's defense of white women monologue was, what the hell are we doing with this country? What is going on? But anyway, maybe that'll pop in there at some point. With that said though, we do have a lot to talk about, including breaking news involving Steve Bannon and what his housing accommodations will be in upcoming months. We're gonna be talking about inflation, gasoline, people losing their minds over AOC dancing as was predicted. And are all Nazis really that bad? Someone finally sticks up for them. And a lot more once we get to the aftermath. So in advance of that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets or super chats, Jessica and I will respond as we go. But with all that said, you ready to start the show?
Let's get into it.
Okay, let's start off with a little bit of fun, including this.
Remember, this illegitimate regime, their judgment day is on 8 November when the Biden administration ends. I want to thank you all for coming. Thanks.
So that was how Steve Bannon's day began, with people yelling fascist and traitor at him. And it really only got worse from there because there were consequences in America in 2022 for someone who did bad things and knew they were bad when he was doing them. What? No, that's what it says in my document here. He apparently was sentenced to 4 months in prison earlier today for 2 counts of contempt to Congress after he repeatedly, in the words of the Daily Beast, fobbed off subpoenas to testify and provide documents to the January 6th commission. So he was warned about this. He knew the potential legal ramifications and he decided that he was going to make a statement by refusing to comply. Now, bearing in mind that he could have done what any number of different Trump circle goons and henchmen did and just go in and refuse to answer any of the actual questions and just take the fifth literally hundreds of times. He could have done that, he chose not to. So now he potentially is facing these 4 months in prison. He is appealing, of course, and he will remain free during that appeal process, which I'm not a lawyer or anything, but this being America and him being powerful, I'm gonna assume is gonna take 4 years. I don't know. He's also fined $6,500, which he will have to pay. Sorry, not him. Random people who view his show will willingly throw their limited funds at him and then he'll transfer that to the government, I guess. He's not gonna lose anything. Anyway, we'll have more on what the judge had to say, but Jessica, are you surprised? What do you think about this 4 month sentence?
Not surprising, right? Because the minimum sentence for something like this is 1 month, a $6,500 fine. We know Bannon's got plenty of money. Many of those dollars came from Donald Trump supporters with the intention of it going towards right, building the wall. What's interesting though is like the beef between Trump's lawyer and Bannon's lawyer. Bannon's lawyer is saying Trump's lawyer is nothing but a thug. He's a really bad guy. So there's so many layers to this, but Bannon's really just bold and arrogant. The fact that he didn't just take the fifth like Roger Stone was doing is insane. So he's getting what he deserves, but maybe he deserves a little bit more.
Maybe we should definitely debate that. I don't know a ton about their lawyers, although I know one was the same lawyer that represented Trump in I'm gonna say his second impeachment. The claim being made even by someone I generally disagree with that the person is a thug. I would assume that's probably why either Steve Bannon and or Trump would have chosen these people. Not for their upstanding ethics or legal trading or whatever. Anyway, prosecutors had asked the DC federal court judge, this is Carl Nichols, who you'll be hearing a lot about on Truth Social in the next few minutes, I'm sure, to toss Ben in prison for half a year, calling it a sustained bad faith contempt of Congress, which exacerbated the assault on the Capitol. They said the defendant has expressed no remorse for his conduct and attacked others at every turn. Bannon's own lawyer agreed he hasn't expressed remorse and was yet to show any intention to comply with the subpoena. So these sorts of sentences can be a punishment for not complying, but it can also be an incentive to comply in the future. They're assuring everyone involved in this process that it is not going to work for the latter part. And to the exacerbation of the problem and not showing remorse, I don't know. I mean, like right before he walked into the courtroom to hear his sentence, he was saying that the election was stolen. And if and when the next coup begins, assuming that he's a free man once again, he's definitely going to be an active participant. Probably not on the front lines, he'd go down in one punch, but he'll be definitely podcasting about it as it happens. So no, I don't expect remorse. He's not going to learn a lesson. No one will. And while I do like to see consequences for crimes being committed, especially when you know you're making the choice, I'm not going in, here are the consequences, and then you act surprised when you get them. At the same time, this will probably only give him more, I was going to say street cred, but I know the rich people that he hangs out with, so I don't think it really counts for that. I guess they technically live on like boulevards or something. I don't know. Anyway, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, him saying that this is an illegitimate regime and their judgment day is November 8th when the administration ends. What? This is not a general election. This is midterms. We're not voting for a president. So it's pretty clear he's calling for another coup. And you're right. These guys are never in the streets. He's calling for this and he will be comfortable in his podcast studio or, you know, posting on Truth Social about it when it's going on. He's not going to be out there risking his life and risking prison time like he expects all of his followers to. But yeah, this was a threat for a coup because it's not a general election on November 8th.
Exactly. Yeah. And look, let's just, we need to understand what is going to be happening over the next few years so that we can be prepared for it. Bannon, whether his appeal succeeds or not, will be out before the 2024 election. And he will be attempting in every possible way that he can to influence candidates, to influence Trump, to influence voters, to end democracy. That's all it is. He does not believe that the Biden administration is illegitimate in a democratic sense. He believes it's illegitimate in that he doesn't like Biden. That's it. And he doesn't care about the vote or democracy or republic or the Constitution or anything like that. Like, I know people love to throw around comparisons of their current day political enemies to, you know, despotic regimes of the past, but he is very much the sort of person that, like, no matter how, like, you can speculate and hypothesize about any potential future you want, as dark as you want it to get, something way worse than anything Margaret Atwood would come up with, you are not going to come up with a future that he would not be an active participant in. He believes the power is to be used to crush your enemies and to lift up the rich people that you hang out with. That's it. There is no end to that. He doesn't care if his opponents are being beaten in the streets, murdered, locked up. Like, this is our, he is one of the purest forms of the ideological obstacles that we have going forward as a democracy. And a couple of months in prison are not going to end that. So let's just be clear about that part.
Yeah, I'm going to remind people of something John said not too long ago when we were doing election coverage during the primaries, which is that the demise of democracy happens very slow, right? It's the slow repeal of your rights. It doesn't feel like a big upsurgence or a coup or a bunch of people in the streets and things are on fire. But exactly what these people are doing is slowly getting us comfortable with this anti-democratic rhetoric, slowly taking over school boards, slowly appointing judges into office. And it's not going to be this one moment where we all have to get in the streets because one big thing happened. It's exactly this, these slow moments where people like Steve Bannon are refusing to participate in the justice process and then threatening a coup and not that many people are talking about it. This is exactly what it's going to look like.
Yeah, I don't remember saying that, but I like what you had to say and I like the idea that I might have said something like it.
You did.
Anyway, by the way, we've had a couple of other people, this is very brief, we're gonna move on to the AOC thing in a sec. We've had a couple of other people that, I mean, look at the January 6th rioters who are going to prison. doesn't it just seem very weird that Steve Bannon, for all that he did, which is very bad, and I think it's clear if you've been watching for the past few minutes, I'm not a fan of the guy, but that he's going to prison and Trump is going to eat another slice of chocolate cake, I guess. It's gonna be beautiful and he's gonna be fine because he's gonna be free, because the more powerful you are, the more free you are to commit literally any crime you want. It's so weird. There was a bit of news going around that it was pitched as Trump's legal team is in a shambles. And the way that we know that is nobody can find anyone to serve his papers to. Do you believe that that would be true of you if you committed a crime? It's just like, we can't find the legal representative. I don't know if we're ever gonna be able to go forward with this thing. Find him and hand them to him. Like, he's not in the jungle somewhere. He's either on a golf course or Mar-a-Lago. That's where he's at. Go in and hand it to him. How is it that they get to be so free of literally every step of this process?
They have a lot of money, John. They have a lot of money and they're white guys. That's the justice system in America. Simple answer.
Yeah, I locked down one of those. I really have to get around to getting the money though, just in case. Anyway,
let's do crimes, John.
I don't know. You never know. The world's getting to a crazy place. Okay, we're gonna demonstrate a little bit of the insanity by changing it up and talking about something totally different. We gave you an initial idea of what the right wing was going to say when they saw this video of AOC dancing, but the response is even more insane than I thought it was. Why don't we jump into this?
I don't know if we need to do a wellness check on AOC or if we can actually make fun of this. She might have some mental health issues there, but let's just pretend she's sane for the sake of the argument here. Which is the cringier moment, her Ricky Ricardo impersonation or her dance moves, Dave?
All right, listen, I'm AOC, I'm standing here, nobody likes me, the jig is up, the grift is up, people are getting it, nobody likes the woke. I don't know, my accent just severely changed in the middle of that. Look, everyone's had it with the wokesters. I hope and pray that her district flips. There is a chance, there's a chance all over the place. New York might flip with Lee Zeldin over Hochul. I mean, everything is up in the air right now. And I think the one way that we can really model an America going forward, sort of based on some of the principles of freedom that are happening right here in Florida, is that we're gonna have to basically say, you know what? That moment where the squad took over and the racism took over and the drag queens and all of this stuff took over, it's in the mirror now, it's in the back mirror, and we can say, AO, see you later.
Okay, a couple of things you need to know about Dave Rubin. One, he's a comedian. I know you need me to tell you that because there was no evidence presented in that video. Also, he non-ironically uses the term wokesters like he's 90 years old. Anyway, so AOC danced because at a town hall meeting where she had a group of her actual constituents, they were trying to talk about issues. People came in with insane signs about UN conspiracy theories and shouted over everyone for 20 minutes, making it impossible for the event to actually work. At some point, she briefly danced in response. And if you want to respond to that from the point of view of a right winger, you could potentially say that it was dismissive, or maybe condescending, or inappropriate, or immature. I don't know, you could say something like that. And I might not agree, but I might get where you're coming from. But to see that dance and say she has mental health problems, she needs a wellness check, that makes as much sense as responding in that way to a video of her eating Cheerios or purchasing clothing. Like, I don't even understand what point you're trying to make. I get that you don't like her and you're obsessed with her and a little bit beyond that that we probably won't go into. I get that. And I get that you really want to take her down, and it's so hard to because the positions she holds are actually very popular. But the idea that that was a demonstration of insanity, Jessica, I spend a lot of time trying to understand the thought process of these people because unlike them, we have empathy and we try to project ourselves into the frame of mind of other people. I don't get what point they're trying to make there.
It really, you know, with the grift, takes a grifter to know a grifter with Dave Rubin there. And for him to say, oh, her impersonation of Ricky Ricardo was cringy, and then he goes on to impersonate her in the cringiest way possible is insane. Also, these people were disrupting a Democratic meeting. I don't care if you don't like a representative, but for them to hold a town hall and talk to their constituents as a member of Congress is rare in this country, and they're supposed to be accountable to their constituents. And then to say she may have mental health issues for dancing, Who is the right wing propping up as their spokesperson, giving them exclusive interviews right now? Kanye West, who has said time and again, when I'm having an episode, I have mental health issues, I cannot control what I say, and I do things that I end up regretting. And what are they doing? They're platforming him and giving him a microphone. So the hypocrisy here is insane.
Yeah, 100%. That is the part that's insane. I want to give them at least minimal credit for being about to use and then opting at the last second not to use the term hysterical. That's definitely how they're trying to present to AOC. Thankfully, they avoided the word, at least for now. Jesse Waters isn't content to just be incredibly misogynistic. He's also going to throw a racial angle in. Take a look at this.
AOC doesn't want to talk about crime, though. She wants to talk about cannabis. But her constituents weren't there to talk about marijuana, and they got a little rambunctious. And so, as Jill Biden says, AOC went full taco.
Yeah, what he did there? You get the thing that he's doing there? It's a taco, because he thinks of people's culture as being about food, and he compares them to food, because he thinks that that's cool. Now, on the substance, I'm sure that her and her constituents would have loved to have talked about any number of issues. The issue, Jesse, was that they could not talk about literally any issue, because while you attempt to squirrel away from what they were doing by saying they got rambunctious, they were banging on drums and yelling so that nothing could be discussed. I don't mean nothing that she specifically wanted to talk about, I mean literally nothing. Even they, assuming that they had any substantive critique of her, nothing was being expressed. They weren't asking questions. They weren't making a comment and then seeing how she responds. The point was to make it impossible for any meeting to happen, to grind government to a screeching halt. So what is she supposed to do at that point? Is she supposed to just stare at it for an hour straight and then eventually pack up her things and go home? Like, I get that we don't get to compare hypothetically how a conservative would respond to this, because barely any conservatives actually hold town halls or in any way responsive to their constituents. AOC, like, honestly, is probably wasting a lot of her time considering how often trolls choose to focus on her in public. But she still tries constantly to be what we think of traditionally of as a congressperson as being, going and actually doing casework and listening to people and championing their causes. And they are actively trying to make that impossible to happen, Jessica.
It also goes to show how disconnected Fox News is from the actual issues, because to say she's not talking about crime and instead she's talking about cannabis, when cannabis law reform is absolutely relevant to crimes. How often do you have communities that are over-policed and you have people who end up getting arrested because a cop smells marijuana and uses that as an excuse to stop and frisk someone or intervene with what they have going on? And then they can say, well, you're not being compliant now. Now you're resisting arrest, which now is the crime that I'm going to arrest you for, right? But they smell weed and that's the first thing they intervene with. Those cops could actually be addressing, I don't know, serious crimes. We had a serial killer in Kansas City and so many people called in complaining. The victims were black women. The serial killer was white. What do you think the police did? They said, we're not worried about this. I am sure there were arrests for simple possession of marijuana by those police officers that could be investigating more serious crimes. So cannabis reform, if that's what AOC is talking about, is absolutely relevant to crime. So the fact that they don't focus on the issues here just tells you everything you need to know about Fox and why they're talking about, you know, her personality instead.
Yeah, 100%. Look, the goal is, it has nothing to do with her dancing or that town hall or any particular issue. They just want to destroy her and anyone ideologically in any way allied with her. That's it. They know that if they can just stop good progressive candidates from working their way up through the political system, then they're going to be perfectly fine. They're going to be perfectly fine, definitely, if Trump or DeSantis or someone like that gets in office. And they're going to be mostly fine if someone like Kamala Harris or someone like that gets in office, because those sorts of people, whether they have a D or an R next to their name, are not going to put the corporate tax rate back to where it was just a few years ago. That's just not going to happen. There is only one threat to the issues they actually care about, which is not about what second graders are teaching or drag queen story hour or anything like that. It's about tax rates. It's about business regulation. It's about the big ticket economic issues. It's only people like AOC that are going to have any chance of posing a threat to the economic dominance of those at the top of the pyramid right now. And so they're going to do literally anything to destroy them. I am curious, though, do you think, like, we don't care about their criticism necessarily. Do you think it was a bad move for her? Was it too dismissive? How would you respond if you were trying to do a follow on TED talk, as you've done in the past, and people were doing that?
Yeah, if I was doing another TED talk and people were disrupting them, it's like, get out. Like, this isn't for you. Like, if you already aren't going to participate, I mean, if you want to show up and ask serious questions about the work she's doing, it's a town hall. You're allowed to participate. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to show up and be disruptive, just get out. It's not worth it. Not at all.
Yeah.
I would not be down for that. And really what Jesse Waters is doing is distracting from, exactly like you said, what are conservatives in Congress doing right now? They're talking about the debt ceiling being a problem and how they need to cut Social Security and Medicare if they get a majority in the next administration. That's extremely unpopular. I'm sure, you know, every voter who watches Fox News would care much more about that issue and cast their ballot differently if they knew that was at stake. But instead, you know, they want to make fun of AOC dancing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, if there was room in their skull for a serious consideration of the future of Medicare or Social Security, that would change how they vote. This entire media infrastructure, all of the Fox News and the OANs and the Newsmaxes and the Ben Shapiro and the various clones of him, all of that is there and funded by the wealthy to just crowd that skull and make it so that there's no room for it, because you're so focused on drag queens reading books or QAnon or Dr. Seuss or Keurig boycotts or God knows what, but just anything that's gonna stop them from focusing on their actual economic futures, why they are in such a bad state, why they keep losing ground. Now, we're gonna talk a little bit about some of that economic damage that's being done to a lot of people on the other side of this break, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I agree, we do need to be aware of what's going on, and sometimes what's going on is the end of the break. But anyway, I like that conversation, and I do wanna, in the next social break, let's continue that, because I do find that interesting, and I do think that there's a meaning to be retained from that. But anyway, we do have other things to talk about for right now, including a bit of fun. Katie Porter has a visual aid, and so you know it's gonna be good. Let's jump into this.
According to this chart, what is the biggest driver of inflation during the pandemic? The blue is the dark blue is the recent period.
It would be corporate profits.
So I love that for a lot of reasons. One, inflation is one of the driving issues of these midterms, and it is critically important that people understand why inflation is as bad as it is. Because if you don't understand the actual causes, then any solutions you put forward are necessarily not going to solve those problems. And they, of course, might create problems of their own. I also love it because despite the fact that that is a massive whiteboard, she opted to hold it herself. That was not placed on a thing next to her. She's holding that. And I just love it. It's a great demonstration of the actual issue, which is corporate price gouging, as she describes in this continued video.
That percentage?
It is 54%, and that number does stay that level of high if you update that number to more recent numbers as well.
So over half of the increased prices people are paying are coming from increases in corporate profits.
Yes, the unit price index is reflected in corporate profits as opposed to other costs.
And how does that compare to historically to other periods of inflation or over other periods of economic time?
As reflected there and in other analysis, it is significantly higher in this recovery, 11.5%.
And what is it today?
53%.
So I want to make sure everyone in America understands this chart. What is a unit labor cost?
The cost, wages and an associated work cost.
So we could just wages. What is a non-labor input cost?
A variety of things, including maintenance and investments.
Okay. So I have to buy the stuff to make the widget. I have to have a factory. I have to keep the lights on. I have to hire someone to make the widget. That's this stuff. And this is what I add on top.
So that little diagram right there is everything that people need to know. Yes, there are pressures that are naturally driving up the price of various goods and services. But that is not why we're in the crisis that we're in right now. And it's critically important that we understand that, because again, as I said, if you're gonna solve this, like just trying to fix the supply chain or just trying to drive down wages is not gonna do anything about companies willingly jacking up the price with no relationship to the actual increase in their costs or anything like that. And the issue, Jessica, is that when I don't know about you, but when I tweet about this, for instance, there are a ton of people who I've noticed their breath all sort of similarly stinks of CEO boot leather that say that this has nothing to do with corporations. Corporations have always wanted profits, so how could that be a new problem or anything like that? But I know that you obviously know a lot more about inflation, these sorts of things than me, so tell me what you think.
That's a great chart. We actually used that chart in a segment on the main show not too long ago. It's from the Economic Policy Institute, and the lighter blue bar at the bottom there shows what labor input costs used to be. So you can see how much that's changed. That bar, you know, it used to make up a much greater percentage of the input costs of corporations to produce a good. So wages are going down and they have been stagnant relative to inflation. Corporate profits are going up. That's largely because they're raising prices for far more than necessary, blaming things like supply chain issues, and that's why we have to raise prices. It would not be the case that corporate profits were skyrocketing if they were just accounting for additional costs because of instability, because of the pandemic or what have you. And then you have Jerome Powell saying stuff like, well, labor's a little bit too strong right now, the labor market's in balance. What he's really saying is we don't like that you're unionizing to demand higher wages, because what's going on right now is people can't afford to live. And so for the solution to be to raise interest rates to make more people unemployed when corporations are experiencing record profits, it's so backwards. And it's good we have someone who's using these charts on the floor of Congress to make it really clear to people in power that that's precisely what's going on.
Yeah, look, I think that that was a great explanation of it. You know, obviously you have a background in training in this. I'm going to be far less eloquent and say, it is so weird to me that people are acting in a way that I'm only intelligent enough to come up with the concept of being an economic cuck. Like, they're being effed over by these CEOs and they fight back against you if you point that out. They say they don't want their prices to be high, but when you explain to them why the prices are so high, their instinct is not to defend themselves, but to defend the people who are screwing them over. And I find that to be so incredibly weird. One would think that that chart would be all that it takes to open someone's eyes, or if not just that, then show them how much corporate profits have gone up. Again, not revenue. Profits, their profits are at record levels. Why is that if they're only raising prices because something, something trains, something, something stimulus check 2 years ago? The profits would not be higher in that case. And yet the people that we're desperately trying to save, some of whom are rich and they don't mean any of what they say online or whatever, but there's plenty of regular people, lots of regular conservatives who probably are feeling a lot of economic pain, and they're doing everything they can to stop you from helping them to address that. Because I guess we could jump ahead a little bit to what people like Bernie Sanders are saying. There are actual ways that you could fix this. Like, Jessica, let's say that you were in charge and you accepted what Katie Porter was saying. What would you do to actually solve the problem that we're currently experiencing with inflation?
Specifically with gas prices and oil prices, like a lot of inflation is driven by high fuel costs because everywhere in the supply chain, you've got to transport goods from where they're created to where they're sold. It leads to price increases everywhere else. So let's start there. You need a negative externality tax, number one, because what they're selling is something that causes carbon emissions to go up, which is going to make our planet unlivable. And they're profiting off of it. A negative externality tax says, okay, you're selling a product that does damage to the environment and people around you. So guess what? You have to pay a part of those profits to address the damages done. But also, you can put a cap on prices. You can put price controls on the cost of fuel in the country. You can also run a well-paid government program to extract the domestic oil that people like Scott Sheffield, who's an oil CEO, says, you know what, we promise steady returns to shareholders so that they can continue extracting oil in this country at the same rate and profiting. What we could do instead is take back a lot of those oil reserves on the permits on federal land that we gave to oil companies and say, you know what, we're gonna pay people as well-paid public employees, employ the people who are unemployed in the country right now and extract that oil ourselves to bring prices back down and address supply chain issues. And then we wouldn't be so reliable on countries like Saudi Arabia. There are so many things you can do.
Yeah.
Taxing corporations is a big one.
Yeah, every step of that, by the way, is, at least if you believe when they say conservatives, when they say what their values are, what they should supposedly want, they would like the more jobs that they would produce. They would like the cheaper gasoline. They would love to stick a thumb in the eye, supposedly, of the Saudis. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they love the Saudis. I don't know. Trump gripped that crystal orb for a while, so I don't know. Maybe the Saudis are good. But yeah, that makes perfect sense. It would actually solve the problem really fast. And this isn't so much just about this, but in general, if you are trying to figure out what is causing a problem, make sure that the variables are actually variable and that they're not constant across cases where the thing you're trying to explain as being causal is actually not true in all of these. So if you look at Bernie Sanders' tweet here, he shows the inflation rate that a number of different Western economies are currently facing. You've got the UK and you've got Ireland, you've got Spain and Germany, a number of other countries. If it's just that Biden sucks, if it's that damn Joe Brandon, why is it that all these other countries have similar or even higher inflation? If it's that we gave stimulus checks 2 years ago, did we give them to Spaniards? No, well, then that's probably not the explanation that you're looking for. Also, if it's about the cost of things, you can look at this comparison by Bernie Sanders of gas prices, because the issue is that gasoline is expensive, oil not that much more expensive than it was a number of years ago. Interesting that there's such a gap there. Anyway, how much time do we have? I want to talk more about oil. It's just so frustrating because this is a problem that we could actually fix. Biden is trying to do a little bit, like releasing gas from the National Reserve and stuff like that. But I don't see him talking about, like he's wagged his finger at CEOs and told them to stop raising prices. But why would they listen to that? How could that possibly solve the problem?
And all of the stock buybacks they're doing. Like, you have so much extra profit that you're buying back your own stock to inflate the price and increase returns to shareholders. And if you're like a regular person in the United States who has to drive to work, what you said earlier, John, is huge. Why are these people listening to conservatives, listening to Fox News hosts, and even listening to people who aren't very clearly pointing out that corporate profits are the reason for inflation? It's like, would you trust a used car salesman who doesn't have your best interests in mind? No. So why are you trusting these people who are lining their pockets with lobbying money from fossil fuel companies? They don't have your best interests in mind either, but you just believe what they say like it's law. It's time for us to apply like this thinking we have in our personal lives of like, I don't trust people who clearly don't have my best interests in mind to our politics.
Yeah, be a little bit skeptical of the arguments coming from the person whose boot is currently pressed against your jugular. How about that as a general rule? Kenny Cliffs has got a great article up on The Intercept about Saudi Arabia, the OPEC oil cuts, and how it might affect the midterm elections. Go read that. I wanted to cover it, but you can read it yourself because we don't have much time. So why don't we jump to this? Were the Nazis really that bad? I mean, not in general. I mean, I guess they were bad, but were all the Nazis really bad? These are the questions that I guess need to be asked, at least according to Matt Kiefer. He's in Indiana running for a local school board. And when he was asked a question about indoctrination in schools, he decided to pivot the conversation to a defense of at least some Nazis, saying all Nazis weren't bad as you specify. They did horrible things. They were in a group frenzy in both cases you cite. So already it's not good to say that all Nazis weren't bad is a weird thing for you to choose to bring up. To then claim that everything they did was just a part of a group frenzy is weird. But honestly, there's one statement that Matt Kiefer goes on to make that I think might even be worse than those which are driving a lot of the headlines about this story. He goes on to say, who is to say if we were both there in the same place and same time that we wouldn't have done the same thing? And if you find yourself on the cusp of willingly telling people, I'm pretty sure I would have killed lots of people too if I'd been in that position. Understand that you can log off at literally any time. You don't have to send that message. You don't have to type those words. You don't even have to run for your local school board if it turns out that you're a massive apologist for literal genocide. Anyway, when he was criticized for defending Nazis, he went on to say that this is just presentism, which Merriam-Webster defines as an attitude towards the past dominated by present day attitudes and experiences. I have personally been the target of claims of being a presentist when I criticized Christopher Columbus recently for a different genocide. And I'm going to say, and I get that this might come off as arrogant, I'm going to be bold enough to say that I think people have pretty much always known that genocide was wrong. I don't think they figured it out in the 70s or the 80s or the 90s. I think they knew it back in the 30s and 40s. I think they knew it in the 1500s. I think people have always known that slavery and rape and torture and murder are bad things. And I think it's really, really weird for you to be defending those practices literally hundreds of years after the fact. Jessica, what do you think?
All this person is saying, if I was there in Germany when the Nazis were taking over, I would have been a part of it. That's all that we're getting from this. You know, he's like, who's to say? What would you do if you were in that situation? You would probably join them. That's his way of saying he would join them if he was in that situation with Christopher Columbus as well. You're absolutely right. He was punished by the Queen of Spain when he came back and stripped of all of his assets. He was condemned for everything he did abroad, even back then. And people just forget this history. And it's also the case that a lot of people forget the history of Nazis. There's not a lot of good teaching of World War II in public schools. And I'm sure if there was, they would fully understand what they're advocating for by saying, you know, Nazis weren't so bad. Maybe, you know, you would join if you were around. No, absolutely not. But maybe he's just telling us who he really is.
100%. Wait, so if I'm hearing you correctly, I'm going to put you down the column of you wouldn't do Nazi stuff.
I would not do Nazi stuff, John. That's for the record, final answer.
Yeah. By the way, I love that the Queen of Spain was a presentist back in the day. She was the original wokester, I think. Anyway, you know how like people don't like in politics when people compare their political opponents to Nazis? It's weirder when you compare yourself to a Nazi. It's like the weirdest thing for it's school board, by the way, dude. Talk about biology. Talk about art. Talk about something that you can teach. And I will remind people, because as Jessica points out, there's not a lot of good history teaching going on. You know that frenzy that the Nazis were in that wasn't so bad? It's estimated to have resulted in the deaths of 6 million Jewish individuals, 7 million Soviet civilians, 3 million just Soviet prisoners of war, very specifically, nearly 2 million non-Jewish Polish civilians. And hundreds and hundreds of thousands of additional people of a number of different groups. It was really, really bad. And that should not need to be stated. I don't think I'm being a presentist when I say it was awful. Anyway, he's probably gonna end up winning. And with that, we're gonna go to our second break of the hour. When we come back, Laura Logan decided to make her last appearance on Newsmax, an audition for InfoWars, I guess. We'll have that and more after this. Okay, two comments I need to read. Jonathan Toten says, Brett's gone, Jessica is the future. Poor Brett. Woke Dragon does say Brett is awesome, but what do you expect from a wokester dragon? But anyway, also, Levi reminded me, by the way, says no CP logos, please. Yeah, I guess. 4chan is sort of right now. I think you might need to come up with another title. Anyway, maybe it could just be like CTR for counter. Just focus on the first word. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, with that said, we've got a lot to talk about with the little time remaining that we have. So why don't we jump into it? Laura Logan appeared on Newsmax for what's looking like the last time and decided to use that time to push a number of different QAnon conspiracy theories as well as some of the most stereotypical anti-Semitic tropes possible. Take a listen to this.
Because I spoke to a man who was actually holding the documents in his hand. He told me about it, right? He said he was he infiltrated the global cabal at the UN level, right? And one of the things that he was able to tell me about from his own personal experience, what he witnessed himself, was these documents that show that the plan, there is a plan, and this was several years ago, right? The plan was to infiltrate 100 million illegal immigrants, and at that point they were already at 40 million, and these people would dilute what they called the pool of patriots. Those were their words, right?
Yes, that's what their words are. The anonymous people that this guy says he infiltrated at the highest levels of the global cabal. And you can take that to the bank. which they control. No, she's speaking absolute nonsense. Now, yes, Laura Logan is capable of sounding educated when she speaks. She's saying the same sort of thing that you'll hear from Alex Jones or Tucker Carlson or Marjorie Greene. She sounds marginally more coherent when she says it, but it is all utter nonsense. It's globalist anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. We're gonna get to the blood stuff soon, but bear in mind, Newsmax is apparently not gonna have her on either ever or until you forget that they said that. So there have been consequences for what she was saying, that she apparently stepped over a line and Newsmax has now canceled her. But with all that said, Jessica, what do you think?
Yeah, it's really difficult when you have, I don't know, it's this divide and conquer mentality, right? Instead of calling out people who are members of the capitalist ruling class, who are running our economy and destroying lives for working class people, you can call that out. You can call out that you don't like the amount of power rich people have in this country, but to say that they're all Jewish and that it's a cabal is not right. There are so many working class Jewish people in this country. To make it about an ethnic, cultural, or religious group does a disservice to everybody. It increases violence, anti-Semitic violence against the Jewish community. And it's just disgusting. It's typical Newsmax tactics of like, let's make them fight each other across these lines of ethnic culture and ethnic groups, culture groups, and race, instead of calling it for what it is, which is the problem in our country, is that it's run by corporatists. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's their typical narrative, and it's getting dangerous, the amount of anti-Semitic rhetoric we have in this country.
Yeah, 100%. And it would be like, it would be bad enough if you got all of this insanity, but it was accompanied by, okay, so I've sketched out that there's this network of international rich people, and here is what we should do to limit their influence. We're gonna have higher taxes on the wealthy. We're gonna stop them from funding political campaigns. We're gonna increase regulation on their business, make sure that they're not breaking the law. But you'll notice that it never is. When they point out that Jews control all of media and banking, the solution is always, now go out there and kill regular people. It's never actually limit the power of rich people, never limit the influence of rich people. They hate the hypothetical global elite. They're perfectly fine with all the individuals. Isn't it weird how that always works out? But as I alluded to, it does get even, oh, sorry, you wanna jump in before we go to this next video?
I was just gonna hammer on your point and say that it's why people are saying right now that the response to the rise of like socialism or people addressing the problems with capitalism is fascism. It's all they've got.
Yeah, 100%. How about let's stop letting them buy elections? If you think that they're so evil and you wanna stop that next 60 million illegal immigrants from coming across the border, stop letting them buy candidates. How about that? Peter Thiel literally can just drop hundreds of millions of dollars to create Senate candidates. How about we stop that from happening? That would be nice. But anyway, let's give her one more video.
It's much bigger than that. God believes that in sovereignty and national identity and the sanctity of family and all the things that we've lived with from the beginning of time. And he knows that the open border is Satan's way of taking control of the world through all of these people who are his stooges and his servants. And they may think that they're going to become gods. That's what they tell us. Yuval Noah Harari and all the rest of them at the World Economic Forum. You know, the ones who want us eating insects, cockroaches and that while they dine on the blood of children. Yeah. Those are the people, right? They're not going to win. They're not going to win.
Well. Okay, so she's now banned. She's not going to be allowed back on. You'll notice there, he just laughs along as she describes these people as cockroaches who dine on the blood of children and says that migrants crossing the southern border are the literal servants of Satan. I mean, she just went from talking about the Global Economic Forum to all Mexicans are Satan's weapons. And she just considers that to be very natural. And look, I'm sure that many viewers of Newsmax were nodding along very enthusiastically to what they were hearing right there. It's all nonsense. These people are out of their mind. They believe literally anything they read online. They believe that that guy infiltrated the global cabal or whatever. They believe this stuff about Satan. They can't be in power. Like, it's just too dangerous considering the stakes. Any final thoughts, Jessica?
Yeah, Leviticus 19:9, where God says nations must have sovereignty and that is God's will and immigrants can't come across the southern border. Yes, it's right in the Bible. What? These people are wild. By the way, Leviticus 19:9 is make provisions for the poor. These people are not real Christians.
Exactly. But what would you know? She's the one who's literally speaking for God. She kept saying what he believes. That seems a little bit heretical. I'm an atheist. You don't have to listen to me, but I don't think you're supposed to talk for God so confidently. Anyway, with that said, let's turn to someone arguably crazier, starting with this.
Don't let him ride your bike no more, Senator. Get that saddle off your bike and straighten your bike up. You letting that president ride your bike. You doing everything they tell you to do. Hey, let me tell you, I don't dance and sing for nobody. I never have. I'm from Wrightsville, Georgia. The Lord has washed me in the blood of Jesus. So right now, I know I represent Georgia. And when I come out, I'm ready to represent Georgia today. Because I love you guys. You guys are my family.
This candidacy is just so much like a terrible car accident that you just can't help but every once in a while just look at. And that is just the projection in every word that he just said there. Like trying to assure people that he's here for his own purposes, that he's not just doing whatever it is the people behind him want him to do. He has no platform. He has no policies. He doesn't have 10 working neurons to rub together. And yet he's fine and you should support him because he is bathed in the blood of God, which is very much, I'm sure, something an individual sinner is supposed to yell at you. It's not supposed to be something that they demonstrate by their good works. They're just supposed to tell you that they've been forgiven by God and so you can't criticize them anymore. Again, I'm an atheist. It's not up to me. I feel like that's not what Christianity is supposed to be like, Jessica.
I also don't know if his campaign promise there or what he's saying, I love you guys, you are my family, coming from Herschel Walker, that doesn't really mean much. I don't know if I was going to be his potential constituent, that would be a reason to maybe not vote for him if he's going to treat you like family.
Yeah, I love you all, you're my family, so you'll never see me again. Anyway. Oh God, we're actually sort of slow rolling this segment though, because honestly, I think that the next video is even worse. Take a look at this.
That's what I learned. Like, guys, what are we getting to that we don't stand up and say what's right now? But we shy away. Sorry about that.
No. Listen, I totally agree. I've preached here for a year. I've been here 32 years, and I've always said you've got a man, you've got a womb man.
Yes.
Womb man.
Yes.
If you don't know what you are, if you have a womb, you're a woman.
Right. Right. And hey, and if you can't produce a child, you're a man.
That's a religious leader and a guy who wants to be a senator. Those are two of the dumbest people I've ever seen in my life. On stage with a crowd who is not walking out as a result of what they're hearing. It's a womb man because it has a womb. And if you can't produce a child, you're a man. So postmenopause, women become men, as we all know. If you are infertile for some reason, you become a man when that happens. Like, do you ever just want to quit? Do you ever just want to like, okay, I think I'm gonna turn the camera off now. I think I'm done with this whole thing. I'm done with the democracy thing, Jessica. How are we supposed to get through to these people? Is there any chance?
Yeah, we just have to go live in the woods, John. We've got to start this whole thing over. It's gone too far. We've got to start again from the beginning. Because why are they talking about this? Why is this their focus when you have so many people who are homeless in the country, so many people are struggling to pay their bills, and they're talking about the origins of the word woman, and linguistically, pretty sure they also got that wrong. Like, why are they making this the focus? And also, not a compelling argument. As you point out, if their daughter happened to be infertile, would they now have a son? Like, come on.
Just
one
them.
Ounce of critical thinking.
According to them. Look, electing Trump was terrible. If Herschel Walker becomes a senator, there is no one who can't become a senator. And not just for not being qualified, but for being riddled with scandal enough to sink 20 Senate races from 20 years ago. Like, they're all like holds are barred or whatever. Like, there's nothing to stop the craziest people in this country, as long as they're famous, as long as they're rich, as long as they'll do the bidding of the rich if he wins. And it's still close within a few points. Okay, with that said, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for our first hour. Thank you to our linear and podcast audience. But there's a lot more where that came from, including the ceremonial throwing away of our Garbage People of the Week coming up on the members app, Twitch, and YouTube. We'll see you in a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.